Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back after the coffee. Very glad to see you here. Glad to notice that there is a lively discussion as well. Time to move onwards to Tanzania. My name is Kim Force, and I'm one of the members of the expert group for aid analysis and evaluation. And now we'll spend an hour talking about our country report of Tanzania, which is a different report. This takes a look at what the impact of Swedish aid has been in Tanzania over the 50 years of development cooperation that we have been there. So it's a much larger time perspective, and we are not digging into the black box of that study, in this study. We'll follow the same format, so there will be a presentation of a report by the authors, then there will be two interventions discussing it, one by Tausi Kida, who comes from the Economic and Social Research Foundation in Dar es Salaam. She has a long background of working and doing research in Tanzania, and right now she is also coordinating the Human Development Report on Tanzania. Then we have Kjell Havnevik here, who comes from Norway and the University of Agder. He's a professor there, and he's also been with the Nordic Africa Institute. And Kjell has also been in Tanzania for a very long period of time, doing various kinds of research, particularly agriculture-related, but also multidimensional in other perspectives. So each of those interventions will be of 10 minutes, and then we'll have an open debate discussion after that for roughly half an hour then. We know that will be short, but after that we'll have about an hour where we split up into different groups where we can discuss more in case we don't have time to catch all your questions here. So, interestingly, the team leader for the report had a bicycle accident in Australia, so he can't be here. But instead, his co-team leader, Professor Oliver Morrissey, is with us from the University of Nottingham on a Skype link here, and it will be very interesting. We hope that it will work well. We're very glad that you, at short notice, can be with us here, but we'll see how it works out, to what extent he can hear questions from you, and also the comments from Kjell and Tausi afterwards. We'll see how it works. Welcome, Oliver, virtually, if not physically, and we look forward to hearing your introduction to the report.
Oliver, are you still with us?
I can't hear very well those who are not close to the sky.
So I'll lean over. You're very welcome to here with your virtual presence. We are grateful that you at short notice can make this presentation of a study, and we look forward to hearing you. So over to you. Go ahead with your presentation, and we'll try to follow with the PowerPoint as well here.
Okay. And I'm just at the one about caveat, and just noting that it's not possible to directly and attribute any quantitative impact in poverty reduction to Sweden. So our evaluation has to focus on, was Swedish cooperation appropriate in terms of what it tried to do? But also acknowledge that we have to be careful about using hindsight. What we know now is not necessarily what people were thinking or viewing as appropriate policies in the 1960s and 1970s. If we move on, the main method of evaluation that we used was the aid quality evaluation framework. It's a heuristic tool combining qualitative and quantitative analysis. And we try to assess three components or core criteria of Swedish cooperation: consistency with the Paris Declaration principles, acknowledging that they were agreed in 2005, and of course our evaluation goes back to the 1960s. Consistency of Swedish cooperation with the development needs in Tanzania, and recognition by Swedish cooperation of the development capacities and the implementation ability in Tanzania at the local level and in terms of how the aid was delivered. We're trying to assess the likely contribution of Swedish cooperation. A considerable component of the analysis and the presentation looks at the Tanzanian context, because we can't really try to understand what effects Swedish cooperation may have had unless we know the context within which it was delivered. We'll provide an overview of the key features of Swedish aid to Tanzania. The study included key informants. I won't review them, but they were used to identify lessons and to inform the implications that we derived at the end. In establishing the Tanzanian context, I'll first of all comment on trends in poverty, both monetary and the non-income, multidimensional features. One major caveat here is that reliable poverty data are really only available since about 1990. Then we look at the policy environment and how that changed, and in particular, macroeconomic performance. And finally, we'll provide a quick overview of donor community support and where Sweden fitted in with that. The one issue to emphasise is that Tanzania has achieved poverty reduction, but the achievements have been limited. That's for a variety of reasons, and perhaps the most fundamental reason is there's been very little economic growth. The main achievements in poverty reduction have been since about mid-2000s, which was also a period of economic growth. Data are somewhat ambiguous as to what happened between 1992 and 2000. Different sources give different trends, but on almost all measures, poverty has decreased, certainly since 2007. Income poverty gaps have been reduced over the 20-year period from 1992, but in general, there are more Tanzanians living in income poverty. That's because of population growth. It's certainly true at the $2 a day indicator. It's less clear if there are really more people living below $1.25 per day. On a more positive note, there have been significant and fairly sustained improvements in non-income dimensions of poverty, such as life expectancy and education. Not all the time, not consistent, but there have been present. Poverty reduction that has been achieved has been almost entirely in urban areas, and in particular in Dar es Salaam. We provide figure 2.1, which is using the World Bank International Comparative Data, purchasing power parity, and there you can see it looks like poverty did increase between 1992 and 2000, but has decreased since 2000. On the three poverty lines that are used there. You can see that life expectancy, a standard measure of health status, has improved quite consistently since the 1960s, except for a period in the early to mid-1990s when performance was poor. There's also been a good record on at least one Millennium Development Goals, child mortality, which is shown in figure 2.5, where there's quite a consistent decrease, notable decrease, since the 1960s, and especially since around 2000. Why do the poverty data give conflicting information? It's ultimately because different prices are used. There's no need to go into that in a lot of detail, but whereas the World Bank data suggests that over the 20 years from 1992, poverty fell by about 40%, from 72% headcount to 44%, but it increased in between 1992 and 2000. The national poverty line shows a steady decrease from a much lower level. And that's, you know, so according to the national poverty line, by 2011-12, headcount poverty was 28.2%. A lot of that difference, particularly in the scale of headcount poverty, is that a large proportion of households are very close to the poverty line. So a small change in the poverty line, particularly when you convert to purchasing power parity and dollar exchange rates, can have a large effect on the numbers that are measured. Nevertheless, all sources agree that poverty fell since about 2007, and probably for longer than that. The main reason for limited achievements in poverty reduction has been, very little growth in household consumption. The main elements of GDP that increased since 2000 were components other than private consumption. However, non-monetary indicators of deprivation have been improving fairly consistently. Tanzania achieved independence in 1961 under President Julius Nyerere. Initially, for about the first 5 years, it had quite an outward-oriented type economy, largely reliant on agriculture and export taxes on cash crops, and modest economic performance, and a very small manufacturing sector. Policy changed significantly in 1967 with the Arusha Declaration, and then we saw the emergence of a state-controlled economy with inward-looking policies and a form of African socialism. The aim, which at the time had fairly widespread support, was to achieve a structural economic transformation. But that failed. It was limited, if any, achievements in agriculture or manufacturing, and macroeconomic policy and macroeconomic performance were weak. However, there was achievement in human development, especially health and education, which in Tanzania were considered good by sub-Saharan African standards. The 1970s were a period when Tanzania was subject to a number of serious external economic shocks. A severe drought, oil price increases, the declining world prices for the cash crops they export, so it was even difficult for them to balance as the payments deficits were increasing. Then in 1997, the East African Community collapsed, and then they had a very costly war with Uganda in 1978-79, when Idi Amin invaded northern Tanzania. They had to mobilize an army that didn't exist, but they won that war. Other commentators on Tanzania have recognized these crises, but in my opinion, have underestimated how severe they were. The impact of that was that by 1980, Tanzania was in a serious economic crisis and very unstable. But Harare, as president, was very resistant to devaluing the Tanzanian shilling, which was the main policy advice from donors, in particular the IMF and the World Bank. If we look at the period up to 1985, when Harare was president, essentially the policies were ineffective in an economic sense, but nevertheless, to a large extent, may have appeared desirable at the time, at least up until the late 1970s. And for those donors that were supporting Tanzania at that time, they were supporting a policy stance that was owned by the government. Tanzania did have its own development strategy, even if it wasn't very successful. We put a figure here just to show the trends in growth, which is in blue, and inflation, which is in red, and you can see the serious instability from the mid-1970s onwards, and that was a period of very poor performance. And then from about 2000, you can see the significant improved performance. On some indicators, using the World Bank's CPIA score, policy, although considered very poor quality in the early 1980s, recovered by the late 1980s, deteriorated again in that period in the early 1990s, and has improved somewhat since then. 1985 was a significant change when President Ali Hassan Mwinyi came into power. He was more amenable to the types of reforms that donors were advocating, and particularly from 1986, there were a number of fairly consistent adjustment reforms. Devaluation, liberalisation of imports by removing quantitative restrictions, a beginning to privatisation and reform of state-owned enterprises, and elements of tax reform, although the tax reform was not particularly successful in increasing revenue. Agriculture performed relatively well in the 1980s, especially in terms of food crops, so it's reasonable to give Mwinyi credit for having gradually restored a market economy. However, relations with donors and economic performance all deteriorated again in the early 1990s. The next change was again associated with the change in president when Benjamin Mkapa came in 1995, and he oversaw a series of reforms that were to a large extent continued by President Kikwete from 2005. So there was fiscal consolidation, not particularly successful in increasing tax revenue as a ratio of GDP, but significantly important in improving public financial and aid management, which is something that donors would have approved of as well. Better expenditure planning, better tracking of expenditures. There was a lot of trade liberalisation. East African cooperation was re-established with a lot of progress on regional integration. The Bank of Tanzania performed very well in terms of managing the exchange rate and monetary policy. So by the end of the 1990s, and beginning to be realised in the 2000s, we had macroeconomic stability and improving economic performance. So I think that Kampa can be given credit for restoring good relations with donors, although Kikwete, possibly because economic performance was much better, was seen as softer on reform and on tackling corruption, and towards the end of his period in power, that led to conflicts with donors. So, to give some interim conclusions, the core feature of the relationship was that much depended on the personality of presidents. That's true for donors in general, and probably also for Sweden. It's also worth recognising that in Tanzania in particular, Nyerere created a kind of an institutional culture of self-reliance and self-determination. So Tanzania was notable committed to local ownership. They had strategies that they believed in. In economic terms, those strategies were not successful. Economic transformation has not been achieved. Agriculture is still weak, low productivity. Manufacturing is still small and weak, though there have been improvements over the last 10 years. As a consequence of the weak economic performance, achievements in poverty reduction, especially income poverty, have been mentioned. Donor support to Tanzania followed this broad pattern. Roughly speaking, up until the 1980s, aid was about 5 to 10% of GDP. It peaked in the early 1990s, a weak period of economic performance, and since about 1998, aid had been around 10%. Swedish aid followed a similar pattern, increasing in the 60s and 70s, but has been quite volatile since then, a lot of movement. One issue that we emphasise is that Swedish aid has become more fragmented. In the period up to 1988, there were typically no more than 26 activities or projects in any given year, but the numbers are in the hundreds since the 1990s. For most years. a high of 261 in 2006, 145 different activities in 2014. This just shows the pattern of aid, and you can see it peaking in the 1970s and 1980s. And this is just showing Sweden's share. It was very high in the 1970s, up to about 30%, but is now around about 5%. And figure 215 shows the proliferation in total of the number of donor activities. So it was fewer than 500 for all donors up to about 1990. Now it's around 3,500. We believe that's a problem, that there are too many donors, perhaps, and the donors themselves have so many activities that there's a lot of fragmentation. Sweden has also...
Another technical interruption, so I have to think of questions to ask. So I think we, given that time is running, and we have... Professor Morrissey has covered several of his main messages. I think we will just take a short glance at what the main conclusions were. He's pointing towards a shifting sector focus with an increase in the operated activities, quite significant, moving from 3 to 20 sectors. He also points to how it has shifted from industrialization efforts, which was a major part of the country program in the late 1970s and 80s, of almost 25-30% of the country program, and then a shift from the 1990s towards debt cancellation and the protection of social expenditures, and then since 2000 a major share in budget support. Shall we look at the next slide? But I think you have, I mean, the report is there to read, and it's still, the presentation is a minor share of what is there in the report. What I see as the main messages coming from it is the overall review of poverty in Tanzania, how that has developed over the years, and what you can deduce from what Sweden has done or not done to alleviate poverty. The report has... then moves on to look at what are actually the factors that have driven poverty in Tanzania over those years, and identifies 4 or 5 major, so to say, areas, drivers. Then that's substantiated with a number of case studies. But let's look at the lessons and the implications. We have a paradox of ownership, which is interesting, because this study really digs into what ownership is and is not, and it both shows that to some extent, certainly a high degree of ownership, Tanzania has expressed its strategy but has been limited in implementation capacity. So Sweden has supported in a way a high level of ownership, but at lower levels it has been less. I think that was pointed out in the Uganda study as well. There were similar conclusions, but one has to unpack the issue of ownership and look at how it plays out at different levels. And we also come back, even in this study, to the issues of Paris principles. He also points to it. Distinction between short-run results and the long-run impact. And it's also interesting that even though you take a 50-year perspective, that tension is there. What else do we need to emphasize, perhaps? The importance of advocacy and dialogue. I think if we compare with the Uganda report, that issue is also there. And looking at 50 years, the nature of this dialogue has been quite different. There were times when the relationships between Sweden and Tanzania were extremely good, well-functioning. It was an improving relationship. At times, it has been tense, and that has varied over the years. It's also, of course, an open question. What could Sweden possibly have done in those years in the 1970s and 80s when we conclude that impact was relatively low? But what kind of policy dialogue would really have been realistic and possible in those years? Proliferation and fragmentation, I think that's very clear what Professor Morrissey presented there. And I think you can imagine that each of those 3,500 donor activities would take about a couple of months, 3 months work to negotiate and monitor, evaluate in the central government ministry. So the workload in administering this in the Tanzanian administration is really tremendous. That is clear. We have politics matters. I think we will get back to that also in the comments that we will have. And I should also say that when we in EBA put up a study like this one, we also have a reference group. And I have been sharing the reference group for the Tanzania study. But we also have a few more of us who were there in the reference group in the audience. Professor Arne Bigsten is here, Professor Göran Hedén is here, and Gun-Britt Andersson. So to the extent that I have not at all given justice to the study here, I mean, maybe you would like to throw in a few more messages when it comes to the debate afterwards. Really sorry for the technical difficulties. We take that to heart, but we shouldn't really plan conferences with Skype links in the future. But because of this traffic accident in Australia and the technical problem with the UK, it has to be like this.